Hello everyone and welcome to the latest episode of EuroHoops podcast, EuroHoop Pod. I'm Antonis Strogilakis. As usually, I'm joined by my great colleague, Cesare Milanti. And today we have another special guest. All our guests are special. You can see him in front of you. European basketball veteran, Justin Cobbs, French League champion in 2018 with Le Mans. He won the Montenegro League two times with Budućnost in 2021-2022. He also won the Croatian Cup with Cedevita. He won the Montenegrin Cup also with Budućnost three times. He had quite the career in Euro Cup and in domestic leagues, but strangely enough, never in EuroLeague, Justin, right? And this is the thing that made you kind of more famous recently, because it became viral. It brought a lot of reaction, because it's an interesting question to raise, in my opinion.
Right.
Thank you for being with us, first of all.
Do I agree with you?
No, I say you. Thank you for being with us. For sure.
Thank you. Of course. I'm happy to be here.
So before we move to your tweet, which raised a very interesting topic, let's talk about your current whereabouts. You play for Cedevita Olimpia right now, and you are in Spain, Badalona, where you face Juventud. Tonight, you guys are looking for your first win. Of course, when we publish the podcast, we will know if you guys got your first win or you didn't get the first. What's the status of the team right now?
We're a team that's working. We had a lot of problems. So to backtrack a little bit. So I think I got injured game three of Euro Cup, which, you know, kind of hindered us a little bit. And then we had players changing. We had one player leave and Prepelic come in. And then we had Carlo Maktish, he got hurt. And now, Sean Jones is hurt. So, you know, we had a lot of injuries. You know, there's no excuses for us to be in our current state, but we're in a tough situation. So, but the team is good. We're still working. We're tied for a second or third, and I can't remember. So we're playing great in domestic league. Just trying to get that first European win.
Yeah, you're tied with Partizan in the ABA league for the third position with a 8-3 record, and that's kind of the paradox for you guys. Like, you're getting pretty important wins in the ABA league against teams like, as I said, Partizan, Budućnost, who's also a EuroCup team, but you're still winless in the EuroCup. So can you drive us through that? What do you think is the matter with this situation?
I just think you can't blame anyone but yourself. I think just us as a team have to come together and, you know, just get the wins. Like you said, we're playing, getting the wins in, you know, ABA League, and I think in EuroCup, you know, obviously the talent level is a little better, I would say. But, you know, we just have to come together and not figure it out. And I think, you know, we're getting better and better every week. And then hopefully we have, I think, 8 more games in Euro Cup. We can squeeze out a few more wins and, you know, make the satisfaction of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm also looking at the scores. I'm looking at how many close games you lost.
Yeah, exactly.
And you could have gotten some big wins. For example, I was watching the full game in particular of the Lotto Lions, I guess one of the best teams in Euro Cup.
Right
now, you had a good opportunity to win here, to win there, for example. You had a good opportunity to beat Juventud at home.
Yeah, exactly.
Closely. And I think from what I've seen, Cedevita, your main issue is, to put it bluntly, a bit of naivety on the defensive end. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, of course. I think, we can always get better on the defensive end. I think at one point we were giving up just too many points, as you said. Easy transition points, not taking fouls when we needed to. But, we have a young team. I'm pretty sure you guys are experienced guys and understand. But we have a young team besides myself and Vlasic that have played, you know, in different levels of Europe. So, guys are learning. And like I said, our thing is to try to, you know, get those guys better every day and, you know, try to keep, you know, pushing forward.
Let's move on to the tweet now. The tweet that you made, and it was... So it was a really good tweet, because, as I said, it raised an interesting topic. And let's read it out. Watching these EuroLeague games got me thinking, I got to be the best player, in quote marks, to never play EuroLeague. Check the numbers, check the winning percentage, the consistency, no off-the-court issues, etc. Let's debate. I'm going to forgive the fact that you didn't tag us, EuroHoops. You tagged a whole lot of other guys, but not EuroHoops. But let's surpass that. Let's talk numbers. Your career numbers in EuroCup. Great numbers. 12.6 points, 4.4 assists, 2 rebounds. A good number for a guard in EuroCup over 7 seasons. You appeared in 4 games. Let's talk about another level of competition, the World Cup qualifiers. Great numbers there, 18.3 points, 5 assists, 2.8 rebounds per game. When Le Mans won the title in France in 2018, you were one of the best players on that team. Almost 14 points per game, 5.8 assists, 2.9 rebounds. So we talked about the numbers. Some of the numbers, some of the standout numbers you had throughout your career.
Right.
What made you write that tweet at that moment, tweet it? Was it something that was going on through your mind for a long period of time, or was it just a thing of the moment right there?
It was kind of spur of the moment. I always was a basketball enthusiast. But I always like, things like this to talk about basketball. And I just want to get other people's takes. A lot of times you hear, things just maybe from your friends or from your colleagues or whatever. But I was just, throwing it out there. And I knew maybe, tagging these different people, it would catch wind. And then just debate basketball. This is what my profession is. This is what I love to do. And then just to hear other people's perspectives to, get an idea of, why, what they see that I might not see, or, vice versa. And I got a little good feedback, obviously you got some trolls that just say anything. And then you have some people who really know basketball. And
that's social media for you.
and they have a lot of good points. So it was just, spur of the moment. And it was just, I just wanted to throw that out there. And I'm happy with the, what happened, and it caught wind. And I got good feedback from it.
And considering the topic of the tweet, why do you think you never played in the EuroLeague? Like, did you have any kind of contacts or talks with EuroLeague club recently in the past or whatever?
Strangely, I can honestly say I don't think I've ever had any close negotiations with any EuroLeague team. I know maybe the closest time was when I was in Budućnost. I had a 2-year contract, and I think the buyout was a little bit too much, so it never was even in consideration. I never had any negotiations and wasn't even close, so I can't even say I had any interest from one early team in my career.
Yeah.
In my eyes, there are 2 different categories in what you said. The best player who never played in EuroLeague, because I assume that you left NBA players. I assume you didn't.
Of course,
let's make that clear. Of course, you didn't make Kevin Rudd, but there are 2 different categories. There are the veterans who never played in EuroLeague so far, like yourself. And there are the guys who haven't played in EuroLeague yet, but they're a bit younger than you. I'm thinking of TJ Short, for example. Yeah. If he continues playing like that and improving, then he's EuroLeague bound. But what I'd like to say is that we did our research, trust me.
Okay.
We tried hard. And the fact that it was so hard to find a player that can dispute what you said makes what you said kind of true. We in the end, we agreed, both me and Cesare, we had a bit of a disagreement of the matter. And the only 2 players we agreed on was Mike Green, the all-time EuroCup leader in assists, and Tariq Kirksey, also a EuroCup veteran. He played mostly in Spain. So we can't find any player. So maybe what you say is true. And the thing is that from one point onward, it seems to me that every player who is a steady contributor on EuroCup or in Basketball Champions League or in Domestic League, they get their EuroLeague opportunity, at least to play 5 games, 6 games. They get that thing. Why did you didn't get that?
I can't. That's the answer I was looking for. That's why I put the tweet out. That was the answer I was looking for, just to get, different people, just to give me some clarity on what I've been trying to get answers for my whole career. When we talk about these things in Europe, we talk about production, we talk about consistency, winning percentage, and obviously no off the court issues. And I check off all those marks. In Euro Cup, I'm always, at the top 10 in PIR. I draw the most fouls, and in Europe, and since my whole career, I shoot free throws at a high rate. I do a lot of things great. I play defense. I'm not a small guard. I'm 6'3", so I can, you know, with the game changing and switching defense, I can switch and do those things. But those are answers that me and you both, I don't know if we'll ever get. I've never got the chance, but I mean, I think my play speaks for itself. I would hope so. And I've been consistent my whole career. We just talked about the numbers, and I just, you know, hopefully one day I'll get that chance and we can figure it. We can maybe have some answers from there, but I don't know.
That would be interesting.
And considering like the amount of things that you talk about yourself, your level, the type of player you are, do you have any kind of teams in the current EuroLeague? Do you feel you could be particularly, great for that team, like a good addition, or would you find yourself comfortable in some situations?
We can think of one too, but we'd like to hear you first saying it.
I'm not sure. Teams in particular, because I'm not really sure of any teams off the top of my head. So I would, maybe let you guys hit, and I can contribute from there.
Well, Cesare, I think the answer to the first is obvious. Alba, right? We agreed on Alba.
Yeah.
Alba.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it because Alba also needs a contributor, a scorer, because they are last in the standings, but also because they are a young team. And what a young team needs, they have young forwards, young players. What better than a veteran showing the young guys how to do it a bit? Not veteran in the EuroLeague, but it's not like the other guys are well-traveled in EuroLeague that are now in Alba. Most of them are. So Alba is a good team that I'd like to think. And also, just I was thinking Valencia.
Yeah, like the fact with Valencia is that it's heavily guarded. Like there are a lot of guards. It's Chris Jones, Martin Hermansson returning,
Still, I could see someone like Justin, being a veteran, extra helping hand. In general, I think a Spanish team would suit you. That's what I would see. Yeah, a more run and gun game, a more free game. What do you think? What kind of style is your favorite to play?
For sure, I can get up and down. Those are always the easiest games to play. The fast paced games and up and down. But also the half court game is good. I've been playing pick and roll my whole career. Obviously being a point guard, so that also works for me. Also, so I think looking at my career and playing in different countries, that was another thing I think that stood out for myself is I've played in Turkey. I've played in Germany and all these places, and the production and the consistency always stays the same, which shows my versatility, I feel like, as a player. A lot of people can't translate from this system to that system, and I think that's another a plus with my game is throughout my career I've always shown versatility and being able to be able to show teams I can do multiple things, which not a lot of people can do. So I think I can fit in a lot of teams. It's just, who's going to take the opportunity. We would have to wait and see.
And considering other players, other names, maybe friend of yours or just guys that you like seeing play, what are the names that comes to your mind when thinking of guys who don't have a EuroLeague opportunity yet?
It was only one guy that they brought up on Twitter when I put up the post was Jacobin Brown. Just given his me watching him play this year in EuroCup, he started off amazing. I know they have a tough situation with the Israel thing, but that was the only name that popped up that was like, okay, that made sense. But other than that, a lot of people agree with me, and just how we talked about this, there's not a lot of names out there. Let's again, not in the NBA, but let's just make that clear. Like I said, that's been playing Europe for a long time, that haven't even just got a chance to say, okay, this guy can't play at that level. So as a basketball player, like I said, we take pride in our game, we're all competitors. You just want to have the opportunity to say, we got to this level and we couldn't do it. And I just think, given of what I've produced so far, I think I definitely deserve that opportunity.
Funnily enough, I was thinking about that, there are some players who didn't play in EuroLeague, but they played in EuroCup and the NBA. They never made the jump to EuroLeague. Justin Hamilton, for example, who played in Valencia, Then he went to the Brooklyn Nets. He was previously on the Timberwolves. But anyway, you said to yourself, you played in a lot of places, a lot of countries. And I like to hear that thought. US players always have great stories to tell. What's the craziest thing that happened to you during your overseas career? I've heard those sort of crazy stories. Maybe you have one, maybe you don't, but let's hear it.
Yeah. The craziest, and it's not even too crazy. The craziest would just be the COVID time. So the COVID time, I was in Bodushnos, and it was the, we weren't playing at this time. Nobody knew what was going on, and everything shut down at this point. We were the last, I think, like one of the last teams to leave for the imports. And then so all the Americans are in the, you guys might even know about this. We were the last Americans, in the room just talking. And our same thing, just how this tweet came out, I kind of panicked. And the United States sent out a state of emergency, state 4, state 5, hurry up and get back or you guys are going to be stuck. So I sent out a tweet, similar to what just happened. I sent out a tweet like, hey, I'm American, I'm trying to get back home, XYZ, how should I go about it? And it went just crazy viral. And then I got a phone call from our president at Bodushnos, and he was like, yes, you guys can go home. So we booked the flight that night, but the airport was closed. So we had to drive all the way to Albania, and we got on the last flight leaving to the United States. So we almost got stuck in Montenegro. So
if you missed that flight, what would have happened? You would be stuck there.
I would be stuck in Albania or in Montenegro. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that was the craziest.
Your family wasn't with you then?
They were. I had just had my son was with me and my girlfriend was with me.
Wow. That's not, the crazy thing that we hear, about some local stories, payments, etc. But that's one memorable thing, not for the good reasons, at least.
Yes. No, payments is always, pretty much fair. Of course, you run into the typical European a little late, but, for me, I'm a vet. I've been here 10 years. So, 1 week, 2 weeks is normal.
And among the countries you visited as a basketball player, you've been here, of course, there's Japan as well. Before coming to Europe, to ABA Liga, to Serie Vita, you were playing with the Aalborg Tokyo. And right. I remember one tweet about, from Ekpe Udo saying that Japan must have been the most peaceful country he lived in. And you quoted that and was like, yeah, I love it here. So tell us about that experience, the level of the Japanese league, the talent of the players there, potentially. Yeah. Because
was it for you personally?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's a different game. Let's just start with the basketball aspect. It's a different game. You have a lot of guys, under 5'8", super quick and really shoot the ball. And just the style of play is just different. So, they ISO from the elbow, not from the low post. The speed of the game is so much faster. It's less tactical, obviously, and more skill based. It's almost, I would compare it to it's almost like entertainment, so it's like a real quick game. And then as far as the people, they're super, super conservative, super nice, helpful. So it's just like a peaceful place. There's no trash anywhere on the ground in Japan. Super clean. Technology is amazing. But it's a great place to play. And it's, the basketball is expanding and it's gaining crazy notoriety. And now you see a lot of, top Europeans are actually going to Japan and playing. I think Hassan Martin is in Shimane. I think the kid from Zenit, I don't know his name, but he's on Tokyo Aurora now. But yeah, a lot of people are going over. So a lot of people are going over there now.
Yes, they have an international presence. Seba Saiz, I'm with right now. So we talked about the an experience you want to forget. So you've been in many places. What's excluding your current situation at Serie Vita Olimpia, of course, what was the happiest you felt on a team, the most fun you had?
The most fun? I mean, I would have to just go back to my rookie year in Frankfurt. Really? The most fun. Yeah, just off the, I didn't know anything about, because for me, it was different. I didn't know anything about EuroLeague. I didn't know anything about EuroCup. I just was having fun playing basketball. It wasn't about the level. It wasn't about anything at that point. I was so young. So that was the first time it was just pure love of the game. It wasn't to reach this goal or to play on this team, because I had no idea about it. So, and that's when everything took off. I think we ended up losing to Bayern Munich. We took them all the way to game five, in the first or second round of the playoffs. And it was just pure, you know, for the love of the game. It wasn't to prove, as you know, now that I'm playing, it wasn't to prove that I should be on this level or to be here. It was just for the love of the game. And I think that was my funnest year.
I said, really, in a surprising manner, I was surprised, because I know that for many U.S. players, for most U.S. players, coming to Europe for the first time, going away from home, going away from their families to a different continent, away from their girlfriends, and all these things, it can be a rude awakening. It can be, wow, where did I arrive at now? What I'm going to do? Where I'm going to spend my free time? Right. All these guys that I'm going to have like a teammate? Everything is so new.
Right.
And this is the tough part of adjusting. I remember Malcolm Delaney says that he said us that he also had a good time in his first year in Europe, because he was only interested in basketball. He said, I was playing, I was practicing, video games at home.
Only sleep, basketball,
practice, video games, sleep, practice. That's it. But it still surprises me that that your rookie year, it was so good for you. Because, you know, any US players find it hard.
Yeah, because as I got older, it was more, everything was winning based, and I wanted to prove that I should be here. I wanted to be on this team. And, you know, after that, my motives changed. You know, when I first got to Europe, it was, I'm a kid from Los Angeles, California, that's never been over here, just playing basketball and enjoying it for the love of the game. The money didn't matter. Nothing, you know, none of this stuff mattered. But so it was more just a genuine love of, you know, just trying to compete and having fun, you know, what we've been doing our whole life, which is playing basketball. So that was obviously. And then we had a great group of guys. I don't know, but it was Mike, myself, Sean Armin, Danilo Bartel, Giannis Volkman. We had a great team. So a lot of these guys are now playing in great places. You know, I know Danilo just retired. He had some injuries with the knees, but
yeah, from injury problems, he was forced to cut his career.
Yeah, he was forced to cut his career. And then, you know, Giannis Volkman is playing amazing in Milan. And we had a great team, so it was fun time.
If I remember correctly, Gordy Herbert was coaching you guys, right?
Gordy.
Considering the fact that, of course, he took Germany to bronze medal in the Eurobasket and then gold medal in the World Cup, what can you tell us about him as a coach, as a person?
I always give Gordy a shout out in every interview I do. We talk about, because he gave me the opportunity for, you know, that's gotten me to this career so far. And so he was a great coach. He let me play through my mistakes. He understood, and you know, obviously he's Canadian, so he understood, or he's from Canada, he understood, you know, what I was going through, you know, being away from home, first time in Europe, I'm gonna make mistakes. And he let me learn, and he let me learn on the fly. And we were able to have a great season that year. And I actually seen Gordy not too long ago. He was you know, obviously for the German Federation, I think we were playing when I was in Budućnost, so we had another same conversation, you know, similar to this. And so like I said, I have nothing but positive things to say about Gordy.
Now let's move to EuroLeague, because we also have some breaking news in a way. We talked about it before we begin with recording, and we have some updates on the matter. Fenerbahce coach Dimitris Doudis is out, apparently. EuroHoops has confirmed it as well as DNA from Greece first reported it. Just if I forget someone, tell me. Dusko Ivanovic out. TJ Parker out from ASVEL. Itudis is the third coach who gets fired in the season so far. And it's still 2023. It's still the first leg of the EuroLeague regular season. A cut.
Also, Scariolo was coached, was before fired right before the start of the EuroLeague season. So, yeah.
You know firsthand how cutthroat European basketball business is, right?
Right, for sure.
If you don't produce, if you don't get results immediately, there is little patience sometimes. You ever felt that as a player, this side of the business in Europe, which is so much different from what happens in the ABA, for example? There's little patience here. You have to produce. You have to abide by certain strict rules sometimes.
Yeah.
If you don't, then there may be trouble.
Yeah, so it's just the nature of the beast. You know, there's a lot of good players out there now. You know, Europe is kind of a they want it now product. So there's no waiting. So you have to go out there and producing and get it done at an early, you know, at an early rate, because if you don't, you know, there's a mini pool of players that are looking to take the opportunity. So I've experienced it just one time in Turkey. I was released in Turkey after I think about 7 games. And this is when I came. That's when I went to Bayern Munich after that.
After Istanbul, yeah.
Yes. So that was my one time experiencing it. And yeah, so I was on the short end of the stick of that time. And that was the first time I understood the business and understanding that, hey, you have to go out there and be ready and produce regardless of the team results. You have to make sure you're showing the club and organization that, you know, you're a piece that they can build around or with.
And what do you think of this move, like the fact that Fener sacked Itudis? What do you think of the team as of now? We know that you're following EuroLeague action
pretty
closely. So
I just think, you know, like I said, with the European market, especially at that level with the budgets they have, you know, they expect the product to be, you know, at a high level. And so losing for them is kind of not acceptable when, you know, you're spending that kind of money and you have that type of budget and you have those players. So, you know, you kind of can understand it, but I see both ends, you know, of the stick, because obviously sometimes, you know, a coach can't play, you know, so the players, you know, obviously they have to play. So you can't put all the blame on the coach, but I understand, you know, because like I said, you invest this money into your product and you expect to see, you know, a nice, beautiful play. And then when you don't see that, it kind of can make you feel a type of way, maybe, which will lead to a change. And,
you know what, when Joel Bolomboy, now playing as Zvezda Rev, at Olympiakos, and he was coming from CSKA Moscow, coached by Tudis, and he's moving to Olympiakos. And Olympiakos also has a lot of systems. They have a great tactics team. And Bolomboy says to me, yeah, we have system, but it's unlike anything we had at CSKA. So imagine what kind of exercise they had at CSKA truly with the Tudis on board.
Right.
Yeah, Fenerbahce, maybe they decided that they need a change. They were coming off consecutive EuroLeague losses. They lost, even though they beat Real Madrid. They were the only team that beat Real Madrid in EuroLeague this season.
Yeah.
They lost to Baskonia, they lost to Barcelona, and they lost to a very short-handed Anadolu Efes in the Turkish league, so that was the icing, perhaps, that.
Yeah, sometimes the coach can't get the players to react how he likes. So sometimes you need a coaching change. You know, coaches can get different players to react in different ways. So maybe it was time. Who knows?
Who do you like in the EuroLeague, Justin Kobes? If you had to pick right now for let's say the top the final four teams, I know it's early. Many things can change, and usually it's about the team that survives this marathon. It's not about who is the fastest sprinter in the beginning. Right. It's about the team that is the best when the finishing line comes. Who would you pick?
Well, I like Madrid just because Tavares is a cheat code, 7-5, and then you have Capazzo with him and Musa. They're just like a well-oiled machine, and you have a bunch of guys that play together for 7 to 10 years together. They're like... It's like clockwork. I don't know. The other play went viral. I think Chacho threw it to Portier. You know, Portier threw it between his legs. He just threw it behind his head. So
insane.
It's just a well-oiled machine. They move the ball together. They know where each other are. It's just, you know, some things you can't teach. It just, you know, it just happens. And I think that they're one of those teams that they just have that factor, that it factor. If they don't, they have that chemistry together that a lot of teams don't have. So I think that's a plus for them. And then adding Tavares and Capasso and it makes this, it's a pretty tough team to beat.
And talking about players, we saw doing our research that you're pretty close with Mike James and Kevin Potter. They're like sending messages and love to each other. What do you think of the performances of those two guys? Of course, we know that KP just came back from a pretty long injury, but what's your opinion on those seasons, considering that Mike is a MVP candidate at the moment?
Yeah. So Mike always been, for me, he was always been 1A, and then, you know, KP is 1B for me, our best players in Europe, but Mike's been doing it for a long time, scoring the ball at a high rate. And the way, you know, he has Monaco playing right now is great. You know, showing he could be a passer too. You know, I think he had a few games with over 10 assists, you know, when teams take him out of the game. So, again, he's just showing versatility and showing he can, he's still playing at a high level and been doing it for a long time. And with KP also, you know, coming off an injury and taking that Partizan team from Euro Cup to now last year to the Final Four in EuroLeague to now, I think they're tied for sixth in EuroLeague currently. Yes. But just taking
there that are many team teams from, that are tied.
Yeah, I know it's pretty tight, but taking them from, you know, I think they were struggling at first to now just running off a few wins. It's good to see, and with them, those guys being close friends, you know, you wouldn't want anything else for them to be successful.
Do you think that this is his season, Mike? I was doing a sort of video for our TikTok channel, and that was a moment he was leading Monaco, okay, in scoring and passing, but also rebounds.
Yeah.
It's crazy. At that moment, yeah, he was leading the team in rebounds. He was doing everything. And we're talking about the Monaco team that doesn't have a high pace. Their offenses are long, they drag a bit, but still, Mike produces a lot of numbers. He's completely carrying the team at this moment, because Jordan Lloyd hasn't fully returned to form after his absence. And do you think that this is the season that Mike James wins MVP finally? And what your opinion also on this, because you know that EuroLeague, if your team doesn't go to the Final Four, then you are out of the question, out of consideration for MVP. Do you agree on this? And do you think that James?
I don't think that, because it's, I mean, when you look at MVP, MVP means most valuable player. So who's the most valuable player and is contributing at a high rate? So, you know, but that's neither here or there. That's their situation. But I think Mike James is definitely a candidate. Like I said, he's one of the best shot makers in EuroLeague. You know, one of the best clutch players in EuroLeague. And like I said, you look at consistency. You look at somebody who's done it year after year after year after year, putting up great numbers. And not also putting up great numbers, but winning games. So when you look at those factors, it's like almost why not has me won one.
And of course, as we talked a lot, you never had the opportunity to face Zvezda or Partizan in the EuroLeague, but you experienced the crazy atmosphere of Stark Arena or the Alexander Nikolic Hall in the ABA Liga.
Right.
So. Yeah. What's like, do you believe there's some kind of differences in the way, like maybe the effort or like the atmosphere itself, the kind of play game they have in the EuroLeague and in the ABA League, considering the fact that you face them in the domestic competition?
For me, I could say I would, just for their sake, I would say yes in the regular season, but also I've played them in the playoffs I was a producer of 3 years and 3 years and set of Vita year for 4 years. So I've played these teams also in the playoffs when it's a trophy on the line. And, you know, we've also been able to grab wins on the road or grab wins at home. So, you know, so regular season, I'll give them a pass and say, okay, you're saving yourself for EuroLeague. But in the playoffs, it's all bets off. It's time to, you know, put your best five out there and try to win the game. And so I've been successful on, you know, both spectrums in regular season and in the playoffs. So, If you know, in a regular season, you guys weren't 100%, I can give you that. But in playoffs, I've also got victories also, so I can't call it.
Yeah.
So we are almost done, Justin. And the last thing we want to ask you is that we read. I couldn't find, for the love of me, I searched everywhere. I couldn't find any more information about that. About your relationship with Russell Westbrook. The only thing that I found that you have in common is that you were both born in Los Angeles.
Different than Los
Angeles. That's the thing. So tell us about that, if you can, please.
So obviously, Los Angeles is a big city, and also playing basketball, you know, at this age, I think Russell's 34. I know a lot of these guys, so... So I think, so when we were younger, we were, you know, a little more closer, because obviously I was in the States and things like that. But you know, when as an American, when you guys are close, you'd be like, hey, this is my brother, or this is my cousin type thing. So it was kind of that relationship. And I think somebody maybe wrote on Wikipedia, like Justin Cobbs is Russell Westbrook's cousin, which wasn't true. So that was just a thing that was going around for a while. But like, I know a lot of these guys, DeMar DeRozan, James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, Russell Westbrook, all these guys are friends of mine, just, you know, for the simple fact that we're in this big mixing pot of basketball players, and we play at UCLA during the summer. We've played against each other in high school. So I've been knowing these guys since I was 11, 12 years old.
Did you beat any of those guys? Did you tell us that you broke Russell Westbrook's ankles in a pickup or something sometime? Please tell us that you did that sometime.
I can't say that, but we've definitely had times, you know, playing at UCLA, just competing, having fun. You know, it's always been a good time playing against those guys, seeing where you match up against, you know, some of the best talent in the NBA.
You need to bring some triple doubles to Cedevita to be like Mr. Triple Double.
That's so rare.
Hey, if we had these big guys rebounding, I might be able to grab some. But if, you know, the game's a little different over here.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, triple double. Many people don't realize it in America. So rare in Europe.
So rare. It's a different game. Like I said, people don't understand. They see these NBA guys come over. That should be another topic you guys should have. These NBA guys come over. How many have successful rates? And it's not a lot. A lot of guys, you know, come from the NBA and they really, really struggle.
They struggle to adjust, not just because, like, I can think, I don't want to drop any particular names as well, but I can think of many, truly, I can think of many players who arrived in Europe. Okay, they weren't superstars in the NBA, of course.
Yeah,
but
right.
Solid, you know, they were veterans from 8 years, and out of all of a sudden, it's like, who are these guys? Are they good at playing basketball? They're like fishes out of the water in a way. They struggle to adjust. Maybe they can't handle the pressure, the atmosphere, the must-win situation of the European thing, the cultural thing that we mentioned before. Yeah, it's difficult. Yeah, that's an interesting topic indeed. Since you mentioned it, since you raised it, what's the biggest problem for you that a US guy, a veteran in the NBA, might have when he comes to Europe? What's the most difficult thing to adjust? Is it the rules? Is it the life? Is it the pressure? Because there are a lot of different things.
I would say two things. I would say one is the spacing. The spacing is totally different. There's no 3 seconds. And once you blow by your man, it's a clear dunk. If you're athletic, you know, it's showtime. You're gonna dunk. But over here, you beat your man, it's help side waiting for you. And then also, I would say just to value every possession. In the NBA, it's okay to, you know, turn the ball over in the fourth quarter. You know, you got maybe 30, 40, you know, 30 more possessions to go. But, you know, in Europe, every possession matters. You turn the ball over and that team go on a run and the crowd start getting into it. Those things matter in Europe. So I think, you know, those are things that you don't have to worry about in the NBA.
Everyone mentions the 3 seconds. Everyone mentions the 3 seconds. Yeah.
It's big. It really makes a difference. You know, because you got to think, you beat your man and you got Tavares behind you. It's okay. But in the NBA, Tavares has to take a step outside the paint, so maybe he can't get there. And if you have your guy with a 40-inch vertical or, you know, 39-inch vertical, you can dunk it before he gets there. But you can't do that when he's sitting there waiting for you walling up. So it's a different game.
So essentially, if a EuroLeague team had Rudy Gobert, it's over.
Oh, that's, I'm telling you, Tavares is a cheat code. It's over.
Tavares is huge. And this is the crazy thing about Real. They have the cheat code on the big men, and now they got the cheat code.
Like Campazzo. I already knew it was coming. Another one that they work so well together. So they have that. Like I said, that's a well-oiled machine in Madrid. So I expect them to do great things in the playoff.
Justin, I think we covered all the topics we want to talk to you. We are really appreciated being with us, and I want to also publicly say that thank you for agreeing to do it with us. It was a very short notice that we gave you, and we notified you. Thank you to all of our viewers. You can catch up with Justin in the EuroCup, of course. By the time we are recording this podcast, Justin and Cedevita would have played in Juventus Badalona, I guess Juventus Badalona on the road, but plenty of games ahead, and also in the ABBA League primarily. Justin, good luck.
Thank you, guys. Great talking to you guys, and we'll talk soon on the DM and stuff, things like that. So you guys take care.
Thanks for being with
us. Good luck tonight. For sure. Season. Cesare, thank you again.
And thank you. From, uh, of course.
from Adorso Glakis and Cesare. That was another episode of EuroHoops EuroHoop Pod podcast. You can find, of course, the episode on YouTube, on Spotify, and on other platforms. Farewell, everyone, and take care.
Take care. Peace. Ciao.